The Biggest Fear by Shirley Day. Read by Claire Cordier. My biggest fear is death. I know, yawn, yawn. But see, it's not the point of death. The pain, or the surprise, or predictability of it all, no. It's the possibility of some friggin' great big family reunion. That's what does my head in. The fear kicked in when we moved to Norfolk. The Broads. Eels, water, and sky. That about sums it up. Mum bought us these life jackets, so as if we fell in, the vest would push us face up. The woman next door told her about them. For years, I kept trying to remember her face, the woman next door. But even right after it all happened, after I was trying to piece it together, the woman next door never really seemed to have a face. I do remember her voice, though. Cigarettes and gravel. That kind of voice. It was her that told us about the lake, with the dead kids, and how, way back when, they used to throw stillborns in the broad by our house. Only sometimes, it wasn't just the dead ones. Sometimes it was the crippled kids, the ones who had something wrong. Stones in their pockets, hands and legs bound, and in they'd go. I didn't like the stories. Clary, my twin, she was the adventurous one. She was different than me. Well, not to look at, we were identical. But I think that identical bit's only skin deep. She was more intelligent, too. You have to remember, we were only 9, so it's difficult to know how it would all have panned out. And I've got a lot more savvy since then. But she could do her times tables any which way she liked. Me, I could only do 5 and 10, but I had that twinny thing. You know, the twin sense. I could get inside her head. So, sometimes, I'd kind of borrow information. The disaster happened maybe a week after we moved in. That's death for you. People like to think it gives 3 knocks or waddles in and plays chess. People like the idea of getting some kind of warning. But death is like a massive industrial hoover. One minute you're sitting down to breakfast with some woman from next door that no one can quite remember. Next minute, you're out of the game. It was the year of the eclipse. Seems portentous writing it like that. The year of the eclipse. But I don't think there was a direct link with the eclipse and our disaster. Dad made us these things to put over our eyes. Like glasses. We weren't supposed to look at the sun, not even when the moon was over it, unless we were wearing the glasses. I have to say, it was odd. The birds, well, they shut right up, and everything started to go grey. The old lady from next door came out. Dad took a photo of us all standing there by the water, smiling, and it was all happy holidays. And then suddenly, it starts to go dark. Mum shouts, "Glasses on!" and we all obey. It gets darker and darker and darker till it's done. No more day. Only my glasses, they must have been nicked underneath. They kept pinching my nose. Now, one thing I hate is damaged stuff. So let's just say the glasses, they kind of pissed me off. I had this niggling thought that maybe Dad, he'd known about it and had given the good ones to Clary. Identical twins don't get identical treatment. So I took the glasses off and tried to straighten them up. And as I did, I looked around and there's the old woman looking straight into the sky, no glasses, and smiling. So I look up too, no glasses. And in that instant, out comes the bloody sun, straight down into my retinas. I can still smell my eyeballs burning. I didn't need my twin sense to tell me all the doctors thought one eye was fucked. They gave me an eye patch and promised specialists, but in the end it never came to that. Initially, Mum was overcautious, but there was stuff that needed doing. We were still unpacking, and the world of the living has a knack of wallpapering over catastrophe. So Clary and me, we put our life jackets on and went back down to the Broad. Clary had this plan. She said how Jesus rose from the dead right after an eclipse, so what about those dead kids? Maybe they'd fancy a little outing. So she stands there at the water's edge, eyes shut and swaying, chanting some weirdo rubbish like, "Children of the dead, we are your friends, come out to play." And me, I'm supposed to sprinkle rose petals over the surface. So I step forward slowly, because of the eels and the fact I can't really see the bank below me on account of my dodgy eye, which, remember, I'm not really happy about because I don't like damaged stuff. I lean out over the water and drop the rose petals over the surface. It's all done. No dead kids are rising, and the rose petals have been dispersed. Result, I'm thinking to myself as I straighten up. I didn't see the little stone step because of my eye, missed my footing, and down into the water I went, way down, despite the jacket. The whole damn vest thing got caught on some underwater root, so I'm struggling away, and it's cold, and I can see Clary on the bank above me, and I'm down there with the dead kids, and the mud, and the eels, and the cold, and the one defunct retina, and suddenly it just stops. My little heart, it just gives out. I stop struggling. Straight off, the life jacket comes unhooked, and my lifeless body goes floating back to the surface through a combination of laws of physics and state-of-the-art life vest technology. Not 1 ounce of personal volition in the mix. It only took a fraction of a second for me to realise I had no intention of staying down there with the eels and the dark and the dead kids. I knew how to get inside Clary's head. You remember the times table? Only I must have done it with more force than usual, because suddenly her little body falls to the floor. This is a whole different ballgame now. I'm not looking for multiplication tables. I'm in her head 100%. And if you know anything about percentages, you know that's not leaving her any room. I stayed where I was for a year or so. But to be honest, having to look at Clary's face in the mirror every morning wasn't a whole heap of laughs. I found a nice counsellor, ever so pretty. I body swapped her for a few months. Swap's a bit misleading, I guess, because the people you jump, they don't exactly have a say in the matter, and they kind of end up with the bum deal. Well, they're kind of dead. Anyway, the counsellor didn't work out. Suddenly, I'm a 9-year-old living in the body of this hyper-efficient young woman. I mean, I have all the information, the knowledge about her job and her family, all that crap. It's all in there, but it takes bloody ages to pull it all out. I made some major cock-ups before I vacated. I picked age-appropriate hosts after that. Usually one a year, though sometimes I'd go for a winter and a summer body. The learning curve is sharp, but I've grown to enjoy the challenge. The transfer doesn't always work. I'm not a fan of defibrillators. It can be bloody awkward when the vacated body gets brought back to life and you have to crawl back to your old husk, pretending like nothing happened. Dad died about 10 years after we did, me and Clary. Because, of course, once I was in that counsellor's body, me and Clary, well, we were history. Mum struggled on. I didn't keep in touch. She was 86 when she finally pegged it. She'd been in a hospice for a few weeks, and I did something I've never done before. I took an ugly body, some moaning martyr charity worker. My God, you should have seen the shoes. Anyway, beggars can't be choosers. No one else was exactly breaking down doors to visit Mum. I got Mum talking about the Broads and the lake with the dead children. She found the old photo, me and Clary, my dad and Mum and the woman next door. Only you couldn't really make out the woman's face. You see, that's what happens when you're half dead. People never remember your face properly. Mum said Mrs. Porter, our neighbour, would have understood the tragedy. She had a twin die too. though no one in the village had been able to remember the twin, or Mrs. Porter, or how long she'd been living on the Broad. When Mum went, I dumped the charity worker without leaving the building. It was a relief to get out of those old tights and bunions. I found a lovely young journalist in the waiting room. She's pretty, with thick blonde hair and a bit of an eBay habit. We all have our faults. When we got to the Broads, Mrs. Porter was still there. She remembered me straight off. Could have all gone differently, me and her. We were the only two of our kind, far as I know. Only Mrs. Porter, she wasn't keen on my style. She said once is an accident, that's excusable, but to use human beings as a lifestyle wardrobe. I told her to call in the UN if she felt like it. I told her I never grieved for Clary. In a way, it had all worked out well because, of course, my eye had been messed up and I don't like a damaged body, never have. I think if she had more energy, she would have tried to jump me, but she knew she didn't stand a chance. I'd imagine there was going to be tea and conversation, the swapping of personal anecdotes, but like I said, she wasn't keen on my style and I wasn't a fan of her oh-so-superior attitude. To be honest, I can't even remember how many people I've jumped. I'm good. I've died most ways imaginable, hence my nonchalance about the actual death event. I tend to avoid drugs. They can cloud your judgment. There's a strong chance you'll pass out before you get to change. Most other methods are fair game. But you see, there's always the possibility that death will creep up on me. Some great articulated lorry heading up the backside of my Fiat Panda. Even I wouldn't be able to argue with that. Once I'm out of the game, I'm out. So yes, I fear death because if there is some great big family reunion malarkey, I am not relishing the thought of all that explaining. When I left that day, I put the old lady out of her misery, put bricks in her pockets and dumped her into the Broad, like they did years ago. Only this time she'd be staying under. See, she was the only evidence, the only one who knew. At the moment, I'm happy. But no doubt my young journalist host had her mobile bleeping out satellite coordinates. They could easily have caught me wheeling old Mrs. Porter across the grass in the wheelbarrow and tipping the old goat feet first down to the bottom. No life vest. So if someone did see me, all I'm saying is, well, maybe I'll be looking for a place to stay. Maybe I'll come visit. No real trouble. To be honest, you won't even know I'm there.